All right, welcome into another edition of the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. What's going on? It's Pat Steinberg along with you on the Flames Talk podcast feed and here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. And we welcome you to episode 14 of the program. We've got a great one for you ahead. Former NHL defenseman and former Flames color commentator Doug Barkley in the spotlight this hour. Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit Cumming Gillespie. .com. Yeah, Doug Barkley, if you grew up in this city as a hockey fan and you grew up in the 80s, 90s, you know exactly who we're talking about. He and Peter Marr, the radio team for so many years. Doug was on the call when the Flames won the Stanley Cup in 1989. Boy, am I looking forward to this conversation, his time in the NHL and his time as the color commentator of the Flames. And we'll get to that conversation with Doug Barkley momentarily. But first, it's time for this week's edition of This Week in Flames History, brought to you by Village Honda. And this week, we're going back 10 years ago to June 24th of 2015.
And it is my honor to announce the winner of this year's Jack Adam Award is... Bob Hartley.
Thank you very much. First, I would like to congratulate Peter Laviolette and Alain Vigneault on their unbelievable season. Great job, guys. Also, I would like to thank my three biggest fans, my wife Micheline, my daughter Christine, and my son Steve. And at the same time, Pierre Lacroix, the Colorado Avalanche, Don Waddell and the Atlanta Thrashers, Jay Feaster, the Calgary Flames ownership group, Ken King, Brian Berg, Brad Treliving, my coaching partners, my support staff, our players, what an unbelievable bunch. Our fans, the Sea of Red, thanks for an unbelievable support.
I have no shoes on, I'm sorry. I got a new suit on, so. Vegas, what a place.
Yeah, the Flames picked up not one, but two major awards this week in 2015 following a successful 2014-15 campaign. Head coach Bob Hartley won the Jack Adams Trophy as Coach of the Year. Flames exceeded all expectations, if you remember, and qualified for the playoffs for the first time in 2009. And at the same time, Yuri Hudler, without his shoes, won the Lady Bing Award after racking up a career-high 76 points to go along with just 14 penalty minutes. That was back on June 24th, 2015. Bob Hartley wins the Jack Adams. Yuri Hudler wins the Lady Bing. And that is This Week in Flames History 10 years ago, brought to you by Village Honda, your dealership for life in the Northwest Auto Mall. Okay, let's dive into the conversation. This week, it is former Flames color commentator Doug Barkley in conversation with Brent Cron and Colin Patterson. Doug also played in the NHL with the Chicago Blackhawks and mostly with the Detroit Red Wings. Let's dive into the conversation with the boys right now.
Let's go back to how you guys met. Barks, we'll start with you. What's your version of it?
That's a tough question there. Actually, Coatsy was a trainer, and he'd come up through lacrosse, and he's got quite a record back there. First of all, he got an education, which not many of us old hockey players have, and he used that to get into the trainer's part of it, and with training camp in Detroit, and then we played in I played, of course, coached in Fort Worth, I coached in the American League, and he was when I made the team to go over to Europe, he was there. He was the first choice. And I didn't realize what an asset he was going to be for us. He could speak Dutch, which helped us in Holland, Germany, Czechoslovakia. If we hadn't had him as an interpreter, we might still be there.
Oh, my God.
Can you still speak Dutch, Coatsy?
Klein beetje.
What did you say?
A little bit.
Oh, okay. You told me to be quiet.
he was a good friend of John Noondijk's because knew he could speak Dutch, too.
Knew he could really speak Dutch because his mother and dad were Dutch. But.
So Coatsy explained a little bit about how the whole situation comes up. You guys go to London. But how do you become involved, Barks? Like, you become the coach, and what do they say to you?
The coach and the GM, it was probably they couldn't find any place else for me in the organization in Detroit. After my injury, of course, I got the coach in Fort Worth. But they had a situation where they needed somebody to go over there that knew a little bit about hockey. And Bruce Norris was very good to me. He said, you can go over there, be general manager and coach. Unfortunately, the general manager part was nothing. It was all handled downtown with some executives from some of his organizations. But the whole trip and the whole team was up to me to pick the players. And first of all, we had to go with the American League team was going to get first choice of the players. So we had to find out where we could get players, what players really, as Coatsy knows, what players wanted to go over for something like this. The favorable thing was that Bruce Norris and his people come up with that they would be paid in Detroit and they could draw from that. So their salaries would be in Detroit, and they'd be getting the American dollar. They'd be going to Europe. They wouldn't spend any money on living quarters, food, anything. So a lot of them made almost their full salary by coming over with us. So we had a few more guys wanted to come over with us after this was brought up to them. So,
so did you have condos and apartments for everybody, or did the team do that, or was it you guys?
No, the big thing right there, we played in Wembley Stadium, and there was a brand new hotel right next to it, and the whole team stayed in the hotel.
It's called the S. It was called the Esso Motor Hotel.
Yeah, Esso. Yeah.
So I said this to them, these guys earlier. So I think we went October the 10th. And anyway, so move into the hotel. So nobody had a house the whole year. Everybody lived in that hotel.
So the guys who had families brought their kids over. They're in the hotel.
Yep. Everybody. Everybody. He and Doug and I and the entire team. We're all in the hotel. So 6 weeks, roughly 6 weeks in the Esso Motor Hotel at Wembley Stadium, right beside the football stadium, and then the Wembley pool was there. And then, as I said to you earlier, we left December the 1st and went on a three-month road trip. And then came back February the 1st and back into the hotel again. So nobody had a house, an apartment or whatever you would call it, for the whole season. Not one day.
So they had no expenses at all over there.
Did you know what you were getting into?
No, not at all. The only thing is, Bruce told me, he said, they have the opportunity. They had Lord Thompson of Fleet and Bruce Norris. Lord Thompson of Fleet, you might not know the name, but he was a big paper guy in Canada. And they were going to build an arena there if they got this thing going. But the problem of getting it going was to get all the teams to have, you know, somebody come in there and say, well, we'll invest some money. And we had basically when they were going to start, they had Scotland. These are all big hockey places. Scotland, England, Holland, and Germany. It all said that they would play in it. You know, they'd get a team in there. And then Czechoslovakia and Finland said they're pretty sure that they'd get involved. The big holdup was, of course, Russia and Sweden. And they were so worried about their amateur standing and their Olympic standing that it didn't look like they were going to do it even then. But Bruce said, well, we're going to go through the year and try and see if we can talk them into it, which, of course, didn't happen. So,
how long was the London Lions around? Like, how long was this? How long were they
from when we got there till we left.
Yeah. Well, so it's just the one season. Yeah. I think our season was, so it started October the 10th. I think we were done like, we were done before the World Championships in April. So we were done maybe the first week of April.
And just one season.
One season, yeah.
And it was an extension of the like a farm system, essentially, out, right? Of Detroit.
Yeah. So everybody was under contract.
Yeah.
To Detroit.
Dennis, how many guys that weren't under contract? Were there any?
None. No.
So every guy that you went, hey, listen, we're going over to London to play this.
Oh, sorry, there was one guy, Coetzee.
Yeah. No, there was a contract on me. Yeah. I wasn't under contract. No, but everybody like the three Swedish guys, they were on Detroit contracts. Tord Lundstrom, Honken Holmquist, and Alf Sterner. So they were Detroit contracted players. Dennis Polonich and a big guy named Mike Corney were rookies that come out of the Western Hockey League that year. They were rookies in the Detroit system.
Was Polo's nose still broken by the time when he got there, or did it take a beating during while he was out there?
No, Polo's nose was broken severely and almost killed Polo later in Detroit with the two-hander from Wolf Paymont.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was when he was actually playing for the Red Wings. Jeez. That didn't happen in London.
Okay.
Even that's in a crazy career, right? You go from playing in London to being the captain of Detroit
he played
at
in the
one
American
point.
League, and, of course, we played against Philadelphia's farm team. And at that time, they had Slepsky,
Schultz, McElhargy.
McElhargy.
Yeah.
And so the only guy we had on our team was Polo.
Yeah.
So he got into an awful lot of fights with those guys, and I tell you, they were tough.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a tough hombre.
Yeah. Man. Oh, yeah. How'd he do? He held his own,
He held his own, yeah.
He was like... I don't want to compare them, but yeah, Domi, Stan Jonathan, Gary Howitt. Remember Gary Howitt in the Islanders? These guys were like Polo's 5'7" at the most. So he's fighting uphill all the time.
Yeah,
he's a tough guy.
Well, he was really tough. Like really tough.
So Barks, you go over there. You go, hey, I'm going to get the suite. I'm going to get everything because you're the coach. You've got a trainer in Al Coetzee. What type of room does he get? What type of room does he get?
I'll give you, this is the best story that you might hear today. In Europe, the trainer is the head man. So I don't find this out. I see it on the...
Coetzee knew, though, the whole time,
yeah,
right?
But halfway through the year, after all these road trips and everything, I go, and I got the smallest room in the hotel you can believe in. For some reason, I had to see Al, so I go up. He's got a suite. And I said, how'd you get this? He said, I'll get it at every place. So then I check. Well, of course, the trainer's the top guy. The coach is nothing.
So Coetzee doesn't tell you no. Never invite you to his room.
No.
Never.
Well, that's the mistake I made because he wanted to see me. I says, "Well, come on up to my room."
Yeah,
big mistake.
I could have got
through the whole year. I figured if he was going to make the money and I'm making nothing, at least I can get the chocolates and maybe some bottle of wine or something in a bigger room.
You kept the beer in your room then? Is that?
Well, of course.
You guys go on the road for 3 months. How does that, like, first of all, where do the wives and the kids go? Do they come with you?
Yep.
On the road.
Yeah. The whole year they were with us everywhere.
What experience?
We didn't have.
There's only two guys and two wives. So.
Yeah, and two babies.
One kid.
Oh, that kid must have been the...
That was like one of our Swedes. That was Lundstrom's child, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
It was okay until we got stopped at the trying to get into Czechoslovakia, and we were stopped for what, 7-8 hours at the border, freezing. Yeah.
But we're also at that border. We go there, and they're not telling us anything. We're standing by the bus and everything, so we got the bus open in there. So we had some of these exercise squeezers.
Yeah.
So they were called bull workers.
So Coetzee gets it out, and it's guards. There's about five of them out there. And Coetzee gets it out, takes it over to them, and says, and then they say, well, how does it work? And he's going, they were handing their guns back and forth. and doing these exercises. So finally, we gave it to them, and then it was just shortly after that they let us through.
We did everything because pins, you know, like pins are huge over there. Like, so they want to give you a crystal. They want a London Lions pin, lapel pin, right? So I got all the bag full of pins trying to buy them off or pay them off so we can get going, right, with this. Because we're going to play the Czech national team the next day,
yeah,
right? We're heading for Prague. Anyway, so no, not interested in the pins. So finally they're going through stuff. What's this? And then I show them, like, all my strength to pull this together.
To go to the 10-degree or 15-degree.
Yeah, I got it about an inch and a half. And then the one guy grabs, oh, yeah, funny. So in my broken German, very broken German, you want this? Oh, yeah. Away we go. I give him the bull worker, back in the bus, and we're off.
So what was the holdup? Just they just wanted to be fleeced?
Well, what happened was, and I said to you earlier, like a lot of the arrangements were all supposed to have been made out of the London office, you know, like Bunny Ahern's office or whatever. So we were supposed to all have visas to get into the country. It had never been done. So we show up at the border, no, there's no visas there.
Yeah,
no list in the office. And we'd already been, if I'm not mistaken, we were in Geneva.
Yeah.
And come from Geneva on the bus to that border and still had another X amount of hours to go. And we're stuck at the border for, I don't know, 5-6 hours or whatever it was. Then we get there, we stay at the International Hotel at night, practice the next morning. He did a great job coaching that team. Anyway, we got the more typical morning skate, right? And pretty lengthy skate. So the interpreter comes to me. He says, wow, you guys work hard in the morning. I says, yeah, well, we'll go back and have lunch. Guys will have a little snooze and be back ready for the game. He said, you know the game's at 1 o'clock, don't you? I said, so I go get him and says, tell him the story. So that's the end of practice. We rush back and have lunch. There was no, right back to the rink. Play the game. I think we lost. 3-2, 3-1?
No, I think it was 5-3, but they still, that was their national team.
So that was Bobby Halik's dad.
Yeah.
And Halik's and who are the other guys? Oh, Stassny, one of the Stassnys played on that team. They had a great team.
Were you bagging them, Barks? Were you skating them in the morning, or what were you doing?
We didn't have enough players to bag. we went over with 17 players, and if you had any injuries at all, we were down to, you know, just bare minimum.
We got one of our goalies recalled, but the problem is, recalled back to Detroit. Problem
and that
is,
that was what, 2 days?
Yeah, so time we found him, or I found him, in an establishment, very well oiled, and he had I think 7 a.m. flight out of Amsterdam,
and lost his passport.
Didn't have a passport. So and it's now about 3 o'clock in the morning. We get 7 a.m. flight. So I called this guy when I played over there. His name was Franz Hendricks. I called this guy at 3 o'clock in the morning, woke him up, and I said, told him who I was, and he said, oh yeah, of course, yeah. I said, I need a huge favor. You meet me at the airport. I mean, everybody knows you. We got to get this player out of the country through passport control with no passport. He says, yeah. I'll see you there. So instead of flying him into Detroit, we flew him into Windsor because he was a Canadian guy, right? Toronto, Windsor. I said, well, it's up to Detroit. He's all yours from now. If you can't get him out of Windsor, we got him that far.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
So Franz gets him through?
He got him through. Oh, yeah. Well,
so how did
the guy
work?
The guy was famous. He was like whoever, Walter Cronkite on television, you know, in Holland. Like everybody, Hi, Franz.
Hello.
What do you need? Yes. No problem for you. No problem. Away you go. Yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah. I don't think that's happening now anymore.
No. But like, how did you know?
C- because he was my sponsor when I played over there.
Okay.
All right, that is part one of this week's conversation with Doug Barkley, and we've got more great stories to come as we continue along. But right now, it's time for this week's edition of Flames Trivia, brought to you by OSY Rentals. Make the best use of your oil field production budget. OSY's Vapor Tight package comes with everything required downstream of the wellhead. Call 1-855-OSY-TANK. And our question this week, centered around this week's guest of honor, Doug Barkley, who played four seasons as a member of the Detroit Red Wings between 1962 and 1966. He was teammates with the likes of Gordie Howe, Alex Delvecchio, Ted Lindsay, Norm Ullman, Paul Henderson, and more. Just some incredible Red Wings teams that Doug was a part of in the 1960s. So I need to know, for this week's trivia question, who was Doug Barkley's head coach in his four seasons with the Detroit Red Wings? We'll give you a few seconds to come up with the answer. Okay, so the answer to this one, did you get it? Doug Barkley's head coach for his four seasons in Detroit, Sid Abel, who was the head coach of the Red Wings between 1957 and 1970. That is this week's edition of Flames Trivia, brought to you by OSY Rentals. And our conversation with Doug Barkley's just getting started. We'll get back to it in just moments time. You are underway. We are underway on this week's edition of the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. And our conversation with Doug Barkley continues around the corner. All right, welcome back to this week's edition of the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. It's Pat Steinberg, and remember, this program is available wherever you get your podcasts on the Flames Talk podcast feed, and we'll get back to the conversation momentarily. Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. This week's edition of the program, we're chatting with Doug Barkley, and we'll get right back to it. But first, it's time for Where Are They Now? This week's edition of Where Are They Now? Brought to you by Pure Chem Services. And this week, we're catching up with former Flames defenseman Robin Regier, who was acquired from the Colorado Avalanche in February of 1999. Regier would go on to play 826 games as a member of the Flames, where he was known as one of the most feared shutdown defensemen in the league. Robin still lives here in Calgary, now a proud member of the Flames alumni, and he's been serving as the chair for the annual Flames Alumni Golf Tournament. Where Are They Now? This week with Robin Regier, and it's brought to you by Pure Chem Services, the expertise to realize higher production and lower costs. Well, this week we are chatting with former Flames color commentator Doug Barkley, former NHL defenseman as well, and more great stories ahead. Let's dive back in to the conversation. It's Doug Barkley chatting with our hosts, Brent Cron and Colin Patterson. Let's pick up the conversation right now.
What was a coach's salary back then, Barks? What?
There's a lot more than mine, I know that.
I tell you, it wasn't much more than I made in my first year playing in the National Hockey League. I think I made $12,000.
Wow.
Yeah. But the first year playing hockey, I made $8,000, so.
Yeah. Wow.
A little different than nowadays, eh?
Oh, crazy. Boy.
You know, I mean, yeah. Well, even when I started,
yeah, but I think we had more fun.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
Well, you did, Coates, because you're in the suite.
Well, the suite, yeah.
With the chocolate.
Yes. With the chocolate. You're dialed in. It was awesome.
What a terrible mistake I made inviting him up to my
you
room.
You should never have done that.
I should not. No. I knew it, too.
Yeah.
As soon as I told him, come to my room, I said, big mistake.
Big mistake. So I'll come, hey, Barks, what room are you in? I'll come meet you there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Come to the coach. Wow, this room's so big.
Yeah.
Wow, you got a bigger one than me.
But, you know, we're, you know, very fortunate because we got to, you know, we're in probably, what, how many, five or six different countries. and we were able to stay in probably every one of them in the top-notch cities. And it was really for the players themselves, it really had to be a learning process for them.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Yeah, the two games we played in Prague, and then we played in, I was telling him earlier about the Hearn Cup that we played in, and Kent Nielsen played for Djurgården on that team. And like I said, we stayed at the Hesperia Hotel in Helsinki all the time when we were there, and we did another nice hotel in Stockholm. And the funny thing was when we played in, it's called Czechia now, but Czechoslovakia then, behind the curtain. But anyway, we played the two Olympic games, and then we played, I think we were in Pilsen, right? Where that all happened. Yeah. Anyway, so.
Anyways, we played in Finland.
But there was a little action in the first game, and we had this, I think it was a five-game exhibition series after playing the national team twice, but all with the club teams. So we go to the first one. I think it was in Pilsen. Anyway, so we're playing the game, and like he said earlier, our guys are getting speared. There's all this stuff going on, da-da-da-da-da. Anyways, there's a bit of a scrum breaks out, or maybe a brawl breaks out. Anyway, so our guys are obviously getting the best of the scrap that's going on the ice. Look out, all of a sudden the end doors open to the ice, and out comes the Army. The Army comes out in the ice. They spray all our players with mace. all our players, they're dropping like flies, crying, and like, I've lost my eyesight, and da da da.
They had their machine guns and
here's
everything.
Here's the best part, though. So I don't even know who the coach was, the Czechia coach was. He's yapping at Bark, you know, like trying to, your ruffian Canadian bombardier. He reaches around the glass, he's left hand, reaches around, boom. down goes that guy.
Would expect nothing less, Bark.
No,
that really helped us get out of the rink.
Yeah.
So they called the game. Called the game in the second period.
Yeah.
So now everybody's a little bit concerned because there was a big crowd. How are we going to get out of here? So we walk out. I was way back when I was a kid, we had a similar situation in Ontario, and I remember the coach saying, pack your bag, but leave your skates out, tie the laces together, and we'll be just fine. Swing them when we're going out. So we did that, actually, getting out of this rink. But now you get outside, and there's the parting of the seas, and on one side, there's one side, go Canada, go. And the other side, they're trying to tip the bus over. Yeah. But here's the best part. So Don Cherry was always right. The best part was the next four games, you couldn't get a ticket anywhere.
Yeah.
Nowhere.
I bet. Like,
it was crazy.
Probably the same place I tried to make a trade. The only trade I made in the whole year I was over there.
Could you make a trade?
With who?
The trainer. Yeah. I was going to trade the trainer.
Well, I can see why.
The Swedish team had a female trainer.
Should have done it.
And she showered with them and everything. We couldn't. And I said, I got to make this trade.
She showered with the team.
Yeah.
Oh, showered with the
team.
Well,
I'm getting that.
Yeah. Not me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been a great trade.
Hey,
actually,
hey, Coatsy, wait for your turn. You can't come in here right now.
It turns out just happened to have an affiliation with Sterner, one of our players.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's a no-brainer, Burks. So get rid of him right away.
Yeah.
That might have been the best trade you could have ever made.
You were.
Yeah.
So did you guys play home and away, or how did it work when you're back in London?
Well, we played. Just about every time we were in London, we almost stayed in Wembley and played. Okay. We played six or seven straight games, but on weekends it'd be three different country come in. So it wasn't like we're going here and then going one game and then back. We usually played four or five when we were at home, didn't we? Of course, we're on the road for 3 months. So.
Well, quite often, like I remember the Moscow Dynamo coming over, they'd play a three-game set, right? And then they go home, and then that's maybe when we would have to play Austria, just to get some games. And then in would come the Red Army, or in would come one of the Czechia teams, whatever type of thing. But we were only home, like I said, for month, 5 weeks, yeah. 6 weeks at the very most, before going on this marathon.
So did you have to pay those guys, like pay the Czechia team, oh, yeah. pay Russia? Yeah, yeah. Were you guys doing that, or was
it was all
Norse?
Downtown. Oh, yeah.
But the interesting thing about it was, which and it really never changed, was somehow or another they would show up with no skates and no equipment.
Oh, yeah.
yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. No skates. Right? Oh, help me out. Sorry.
It was pretty amazing. But yeah. Anyway.
Czechoslovakia, they were supposed to give us, like, for each game, like 3 cases of Coke or something like that. They offered us 6 cases of beer each for yeah. each game.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Because yeah, it was so expensive. We got paid for every game we played on the road. Of course, that went downtown, too. But it wasn't a big sum of money. It wasn't, you know.
So did you guys have, there wasn't credit cards back in the day. How did that work? Like for paying for team meals or?
That was all charged back to London. Yeah.
We had, what do you call it? I can't remember what the name of it now. Like you took American Express.
Traveler checks.
Traveler checks.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Oh, yeah. That's. I remember those traveler's checks.
So one of the funniest things was after the season was over, I was in a meeting with Bunny Ahern. I'd say at that time he was the president of, and he called me in and I said, you know, what do you want? He said, I'd like to do something for you. He said, and I think you'll agree with it. I said, okay, what do you want to do? He said, I want to take your team and put them back as amateurs, the whole team, and play for London, and we'll try to get you in the Olympics.
Wow.
Could you believe that? And he probably could have done it.
That would have been unbelievable.
Yeah. But he offered it. Well, he was maybe the biggest crook that probably survived because he could do anything.
I don't think you've ever heard the story before. That is unbelievable. Yeah.
It is. Like, I go.
Yeah, you weren't part of it. You're sweet.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Goatsy would have been much.
He couldn't reinstate you.
Oh, that's unreal.
Yeah. But he could. He ran it like he was.
It was his own
king
thing.
Yeah, he was the head of the British amateur, but also the IIHF.
But just like now, like you've got somebody the head of the double IIHF.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They're powerful. Well, that's what he was then. Like so, you were ruled Finland, Sweden, Czech. So you ruled all the because it was all amateur, yeah. And that was part of this thing. Really, going back to the reason for going over there was. The acceptance or the potential acceptance of pro hockey, whether or not people would accept it or not over there. And that was, like I said earlier, it was a bit of an experiment to see how it would be accepted and whether people would buy into it or not.
But he had the travel agency, all our travel, and he arranged all the games because he had the connections through there. So I'm sure he got paid
he might have been yeah might have
for
get
each
little,
of those games
a little grease yeah,
yeah. yeah guy knew what he was doing yeah.
Oh no, he was smart that way.
Well, he was a powerful guy yeah. in international hockey at the time for sure. Yeah,
but even you know we had Luber on, you know, and he was talking about, you know, he's playing in Sweden and he's working, you know, and he's getting minimal amount of
yeah.
money
yeah.
but you know at least he's getting money. Right, but I think you know that's the start of it, right? The start of professional hockey in Europe, and you guys were, you know, the guys who really, I believe, started it.
Well, let's see, you know, that's just back in my era, the you had to work in the summertime. You know, when we played in the, you know, the Central League or
yeah.
the Western League or the American League, you couldn't afford not to.
Well, you know, Marks, we were talking to Coetzee though too. He had so many jobs. You know, he was laid foundations. He was a teacher. He was a marketing guy.
Good foundations, by the way.
Yeah, poor foundations. What were some of your jobs that you had?
Well, I started off. It's kind of a funny situation. My brother-in-law was in the oil patch, and he was going down to Medicine Hat. And he said, why don't you come with me? And I said, okay. So I was 17. I went down to Medicine Hat. And he's going to be there a week. And I said, well, what do I do for a week? He said, he saw in the paper there's tryouts for the Medicine Hat Tigers. So I said, okay, so I go down there. Alex Kalita, who was an old National Hockey Leaguer for Chicago, was the coach. I said, well, I don't have any skates. He says, oh, we'll get you some. So I made the team, fortunate enough to make the All-Star team, and turned pro the next year in the Western League with Calgary. And that was the start of my career. Went to Chicago. It was really no availability in Chicago. I wasn't going to be with them. And they traded me to Detroit. And that was the best part of my career, was getting traded to Detroit. We didn't have much of a team there. We had Gordie Howe, Alex Delvecchio.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah. Normie Allman. We had Marcel Pronovo and Bill Gadsby on the tent, and Terry Sawchuk in goal. And it was in my fourth year when I got hurt, and I roomed with Gordie Howe for 2 years, and that was enough for my career, just the fact that I was able to live and call him a friend. I
mean, wow.
It was unbelievable. And then I scouted for Detroit for a little while. Then I went down and coached in their minor league team in Fort Worth, Texas. And then I went to Virginia and coached there, and, of course, our trip to Europe. Then I scouted for Detroit when I decided to leave Detroit, come back to Calgary. And I got on the radio with Peter Maher, who, just like Coach, Peter carried me for 21 years. So, but it's been a great career. And
you coached the Red Wings twice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got fired twice.
Did Grapes call you?
I would say coach twice, Mark. We're all positive on this show.
Yeah.
That, wow. You know what, Barks, I go, you think about your time with, you know, the Flames and Peter Maher, yeah. And what a great era.
Yeah.
Right? So much fun.
Well, you know, we were talking about our team in Europe that Coach and I had. The guys with the Flames were the same. I mean, every one of them. And now, you know, fortunately, I'm in the alumni, and the guys are just like they were when we were playing, you know. And they're all great. They all stick together. They're all – and this is the best – the best alumni in the whole National Hockey League in Calgary, I guarantee you.
It is pretty good. But I go, Mark, when you think of it, like, people don't understand now, because everybody, you know, they're all flying, like, private, you know, and we were commercial,
yeah.
And we all flew together. So, you know, the media came with the team, and, you know, you might think, oh, the media will sit up front, the guys, no, we're all intertwined. And yeah. I remember, you know, you and I, like, I go, this will sound corny, but we were across from the aisle from each other, and I was, you know, brand new to the team, and you talked to me, and I go, it was like you're talking to me as a buddy and
yeah.
as a long-term player, and I always appreciate that. And,
yeah.
and you think of that, but you go, that's what guys who played the game bring,
yeah.
right? They want to bring you in, they want to help you, and I always consider that, you know, part of my learning process, right? You help other guys.
Yeah.
But back in those days, it was so much fun.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we didn't have that separation of media, you know, ownership, management, and players. Yeah. We were all together. And you know what? I always appreciate
yeah.
that.
A big part of that, of course, was Cliff Fletcher. Cliff was great with connecting the media with the players and having us be able to travel with you guys all the time. And
it was so good. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Now, you know, I was just kind of going over your career, Doug. And I had a few questions because you played one season for the Medicine Hat Tigers or how many?
The what?
How many? The Tigers. You played junior, right?
Just 1 year.
Just yeah. 1 year, yeah. And then you said you turned pro.
Yeah.
Right?
With Stampeders, Calgary Stampeders.
Yeah.
In the Western Hockey League at that time.
Yeah. So, Parks, explain the whole system.
Yeah,
back
that's where
in
I was
day.
Going with this, yeah.
Like I explained, being in Calgary, playing in the Western Hockey League.
So you have the NHL.
That'd be the American League.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, okay.
Maybe not quite. There's a lot of guys that were getting old from the American League or National League would come there. But the situation in Calgary was I talked to one of the veterans that had just come down from Chicago, and I think the next year I went to Chicago's training camp, and they sent me to Buffalo. So I come back to Calgary the following year, and I'm telling this guy, I said, Well, I'm on the 24-hour recall. And he says, that's great, Doug. He says, I've been on the 24-hour recall for 10 years.
Yeah, was it the Buffalo Bisons back then?
Yeah, Buffalo Bisons. And I played back and forth with them, and that's why I knew that I wasn't going to go anywhere in Chicago. But going to Detroit was...
So, like, just in terms of the leagues, what was the difference between the Buffalo Bisons and the Calgary Stampeders? Like, what, like it was, one was WHL, one was AHL, but what was the difference?
The American League had their major owners, and that were had a few more better players in there. They still had some elderly guys in there, but most of the they tried to get their young guys in there playing. So,
contract wise, Barks,
contracts were terrible.
What were you making if you played in the NHL? Two way contract, obviously.
Two way, I think they were about $6,000, and if you played in the NHL, but then if you played like Calgary when I signed there, I think it was $3,200. So. That's what I said. We had to work during the summer.
Yeah, but, no kidding.
Yeah, the salaries were not. In Detroit, Gordy was supposed to be the highest paid player in Detroit forever. So Bobby Bond comes back from California, and halfway through the season, he says to Gordy, I got to tell you this. He says, I'm making more money here than you're making. They didn't treat their players like they do nowadays and to hang them. I mean, what should Gordy be making? I mean, unbelievable. He should be as much as the team is probably making. Well, he was the team, so.
Well, no agents, too. You were just doing it yourself, or how?
No agents. They couldn't afford that.
Yeah.
but it was before salary disclosure.
Yeah.
That was a big thing.
Yeah.
And guys didn't share information, so I think it was I don't think it was until about 93.
Yeah, salary disclosure came in.
Yeah, salary disclosure.
Yeah. I remember when salary disclosure came in and they put, all our salaries out. I go, my phone was ringing. I go, I know who it is. And Sherry, my wife, goes, who is it? I go, it's my mom. Because she's read it already. I pick up the phone. She's like, you make more money than your dad. I do know that.
I'm sorry.
I remember that morning because we were in Quebec City. Quebec City, go in the dressing room. There's about 30 Globe and Mails on the floor, all open to one page.
That's the great story. I read the story. The referee is talking about contracts. He goes in to see Mr. Campbell, president. Mr. Campbell says, Red, we got to get you signed. He said, okay. So he gives him an envelope, and he said, I want you to make sure that you don't tell anybody what I put in that envelope. And Red says, Mr. Campbell, I'm just as embarrassed as you are. I won't tell anybody.
And to think Clarence Campbell has a bowl made after him and a win. Oh, my God, that's great.
Oh, Doug.
You remember that day about Bobby Stewart and Bearcat? Remember when Peter Maher and Dehatchek and George Johnson... That was the morning of the disclosure, but it was also McGinnis's arbitration. He'd won his arbitration. And so Peter Maher says to Bobby Stewart, equipment manager, he says, I think McGinnis got $455,000 or something like that awarded in arbitration, right? So they were standing around Bobby sharpening skates out in the hallway. So Peter or George or Eric or somebody says, Bobby says, wow, what do you think about that award that McGinnis got, Bobby? He says, yeah, that's unbelievable. He says, between the two of us, we're making a little over $500,000.
Bobby was
something. He was a great guy.
Bobby had an unbelievable sense of humor.
One of the greatest stories with him was we're in San Francisco, and we go out for dinner, and every 5 feet, 10 feet, there's somebody with a cup holding it out for to give them some money to, So you know, we go back. The next morning, I get up early anyway, so I'm out on the street, and Bobby comes out. He walks down the street, comes back. He's got his cup, and he said, Bobby, you got a coffee? He said, no, he says, I've already made $8, he said.
He was a great guy,
He was.
Yeah, he and Bearcat were so good together. Yeah, oh, yeah. My God.
I'm just so happy to be a part of this. This is crazy. Listen to this stuff, man. I don't want to leave. I don't.
Let's talk about Peter Marr's 500th game in the NHL. Like, yeah, we can go through. We're going to go through every 500 steps.
I told him that we're in Montreal, and he had all his pals come down from Nova Scotia, and it was unbelievable. They had the one room. They had the whole room was just full of beer. I said after it was over, I said, I don't think there was any alcohol left in there. And so I don't know if this was the time that he ordered all the food for you guys.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
So he ordered a big, probably $400 or $500 worth of food and drinks for these guys, and the team went to a movie. They didn't even come. He's got all the food there. Now the guys coming in. Now the guys coming up, the waiters, and saying, "You know, what do we do?" He said, "I'm not paying for that food." The guy said, "Well, what do we do?" I don't know how they worked it out there, but anyway, he had his brother there,
Newby.
And he had about five or six other friends. And I'll tell you what, they just tore apart that hotel. They were just unbelievable. And I don't know how Peter, I don't think he, you know, could even stand the next day. Went on the air, and just like Peter did all the time. He
couldn't
just
tell.
Oh, you couldn't tell. It was just unbelievable.
Delivered the game, right, Coatsy?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
But his belts, he
had some help, though. I don't think there's any belt loops left in the back of his pants because between Bark and I, throwing him into the back seat of a cab.
A few times we had to do that. But Pete, it was those guys, when they got together, they were just unbelievable. The next night, when we were after the game, we were in, and some of the families that were staying there from the team. And the night before, I didn't realize it because I didn't hear him. But Peter, I guess, and his guys were up and down the hallway yelling, screaming, and so this night, all the families, all the people from the families were, Peter, where are you, Peter? And they're up and down the hall till about 4 in the morning. They're just
I think Peter might have been face down.
he can't hear you now.
Yeah. He's just rehearsing. Yeah. Rehearsing for the next game.
Barks, how did you end up with that job, by the way?
I went, that's another funny story. I went to Montreal and to the draft. And I went in there, and the head scout, Jimmy from Detroit, comes up to me. He says, "Come on with me." So I go and I'm going up to his room.
Jimmy Devolano?
No, Jim. Who's the head scout?
Skinner.
Okay.
Are you talking about for Detroit or Calgary?
Yeah, Detroit.
Jimmy Skinner, you're talking about?
Yeah, Skinner. Jimmy Skinner. And so we go up.
Would
to
have been
his,
better, Devolano. Yeah, so yeah, we'll go
to,
with Skinner.
We go up to his room. And he says, "Doug," he says, "you know you're not working with us anymore." And I said, "Yeah, I know that." He says, "Well, what are you doing here?" And I said, "Well, I'm talking with the radio guys in Calgary and seeing if I, get a job with them." He said, "Oh, okay." So anyway, come back here.
What year is this?
Yeah, that would be your
80? That was the first year there were.
Your first year. And so I come back to Calgary, and I forget who I was talking to on one station, and they said, "Well, we'll think about it, we'll decide." And then we talked to the ones that finally got the Flames, and the guy says, "You got the job if you want it." And I said, "Geez, well, I appreciate that." And he said, "Well, We don't have anybody else right now because Peter wasn't here the first couple of years. He was in Toronto, and then finally he came here, which was a godsend because he's as good as anybody ever. Yeah,
unbelievable. Yeah. I don't know how you guys ever got him. Yeah. See, how'd you get Peter Marr?
I don't know actually. It would have been, I'm guessing here a little bit, but Molson's had so much power in the Canadian teams type of thing that they really wanted to make sure this was successful here, you know, from a broadcast standpoint, because they had the rights. They had the broadcast and marketing rights to the team for the first 10 years. So I'm pretty sure it was through them that they would have pushed that notion on. Well, he didn't have to push very hard because, as Doug just said, he was unbelievable.
Yeah. I know here, one thing, they didn't make a background check on him.
You're good. Sometimes pass on through. You need to call your Swedish buddy to get him through the passport office. You're good, right? Through customs. Just make a call.
Well, and on that, there was a time where I thought we were going to lose him to go back because they were trying to woo him back to Toronto. And so we got organized ourselves here with the radio station and made a little bit of a partnership deal to make sure that didn't happen. So anyways, so he retired as a great Flames broadcaster.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, Barks, you
yeah,
and him.
Yeah, baby. Wow. Yeah, you bet. You bet. In your, like growing up, did you think that you may actually have a chance to make the National Hockey League? Like, at what point did it ever cross your mind, or did you just play?
No, it was none. I grew up in Lethbridge, and the guy that run the junior team there, if you played football, he wouldn't let you go on the teams. So in high school, I played football, so I never got the opportunity. That's why I went to Medicine Hat.
Why did he not? That was just a prejudice.
I don't know. I think you get hurt or you know. I don't know. I had no. His name was Ed Bruchet. He was there for a long time, but there was no way I was going to play for Lethbridge. So fortunately, going to Medicine Hat, you know, I made the team and it went on from there. So
they just gave you a pair of skates and
skates equipment. Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah.
Barks, what about the 89 run? What do you remember about that?
Oh, it was. But it's the thing with that team, you just watch. Like Coachy said, it didn't matter how you wanted to play. The team could play that way, you know. I mean, it was just, and the rink suited you. I mean, you had a big team, and the guys were, I mean, the boards were high. Remember the pitcher, Theo. He said line change, and all you could see was his top of his head.
Yeah. That was in Elston's NHL in the good. Hockey yeah, news,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, he was great. He had good, great stuff.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you were doing the radio with the Flames too, doing the color, did you go down and obviously interact with the team too? Did you interview guys, all that kind of stuff? Like
I did. I did for a while, and then Pete did most of it. And then after the games, he always went down. I stayed upstairs. And when they won the cup, he went down to the dressing room. I was up top, and I'd say a couple of things. And I said, "Oh, for a break, we had no breaks." And the guys back at the station, they're going, "We don't have any any breaks." And I'm going like a 30 seconds, and then taking a break. And I had nothing to say because Pete was coming on every once in a while from the dressing room. So
it was pretty. It was so much fun. Oh my God.
And then our flights.
Oh, right? Flight was great. Yeah.
Was that private coming back or was that all commercial going back?
Yeah, but wrong airport we were at. Yeah. Had to change airports because we were too late to get out of there. And
it was pretty.
And the Beast.
Yeah.
Oh my God. There's so many great memories right from that. And lots of fun.
And a ton of people. at the airport when you get back.
All right, there you have it. It is former Flames color commentator Doug Barkley wrapping up this week on the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. Thanks to Doug for stopping by with Brent Cron and Colin Patterson. Thanks, as always, to the Garrison Pub as well. As we start to wrap up this week's episode, my name is Pat Steinberg, Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com, and we will chat with you on next week's episode.